A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph on Wednesday. We are wedged in between the day and night sessions at the moment as we come to you. Simon Briggs from The Telegraph, Catherine Whittaker from Eurosport, and myself, David Law, from BBC Radio 5 Live, on what has been a dramatic day here at the US Open, a day that really we didn't expect to be dramatic. From a perspective of Johanna Konta of Great Britain, who was leading by a set to love. She was absolutely cruising along, and then she collapsed at the end of the second set, had lengthy treatment, and still ended up coming back to win the match. That is just one of many stories. Novak Djokovic today didn't end up having to play a match because his opponent Jiří Veselý was forced to withdraw from the tournament because of a left forearm injury. So a nice, free, easy passage for Djokovic through. Nadal still to come. We'll update you on his progress after that one's done. But first and foremost, Catherine, drama on that court. Kyle Edmund had won. He came through comfortably, and on the same court, Johanna Konta looked like she was going to do the same. And then it all started to go horribly wrong.
Yeah, it's impossible to overstate, really, just how challenging the conditions on that court were. I was... It's a weird one because the actual air temperature today is cooler than it's been on other days. It's by no means cool, but it is, you know, and we're standing here now, there's a nice breeze, it feels fine. Over there, it was not fine. It was a completely airless court. It's about 85-90% humidity. I was struggling to stand up just standing there courtside. I was in quite a bad way, in all honesty, and she was, well, both of them were out there trying to play tennis, and she was absolutely fine in that first set, but then it hits you with, you know, it's fluid loss and everything, you know, you that's how it gets you, dehydration, all the rest of it. She hasn't come into press at this stage, so we don't know. Obviously there's the cramping rule, which she can't have been treated for cramp, because had that been the case, she would have had to have conceded that second set. At the moment she collapsed, she was set point down and it was second serve. So in order to receive treatment for cramp, it would have had to been between sets, in which case she'd have had to concede that set. She didn't. After that enormous delay to be diagnosed and then treated, she then came out, served a second service fault, and that was the end of the set. And then she went out for a lengthy bathroom break. As far as I know, that's within the rules. And frankly, why wouldn't she? I can understand why Pironkova might not feel great about it. She despite looking pretty breezy in those challenging conditions, completely fell apart in the third set. I don't really know what happened out there. It was extraordinary. Other than that, I'm struggling to find the words for how challenging those conditions were, really. Maybe I'm faint of heart, but I was in a bad way out there just trying to stand up.
Simon, it made me think of the match that Murray played a couple of years ago when he cramped up in the early rounds and he ended up going five sets in a similar kind of sultry and cloudy day, which in terms of the headline temperature and the feel, it didn't feel quite as hot, but just so draining and heavy.
Was it Robin Haase, maybe? Yeah, there was an interesting little note from Kyle Edmund earlier on saying that he tries to avoid fist pumping in these conditions, because
that was during his interview with me on Five Live, because I actually had to break the news to him about the fact that Konta had collapsed, and he was saying exactly that you know, I've learned my lesson that you have to keep emotionally stable throughout the match, because if you get too engaged, that's when you do start to cramp even more.
I think Naomi Brody said that she her forearm cramped up yesterday when she performed a fist pump during the match against Laura Robson. So there's an interesting mind-body connection, but it's not entirely a solely physical phenomenon. There's a stress-related element to it. There's an excitement, adrenaline-related element to it. But, I mean, my takeaway from this whole thing is just pure admiration, really, for Joe's courage. I mean, it's frightening when people, but it happens to people. I remember Jamie Hampton suffering a full body cramp the first year I was here. I think she was playing the late lamented Elena Baltacha at the time. Or was it Kyotovong? It's one of the British women. And, you know, she had to be carted off the court, and you wondered for her health and whether she was going to go to the hospital. And Joe was in the same position. And then suddenly she was back on the court, contesting the third set, playing drop shots, playing tactically fantastic, smart tennis to get round Peronkova, who was clearly banjaxed by the whole thing and had no idea what to do. It was just a monumental feat of Dunkirk spirit.
And not only that, I think great credit to her for settling herself down, because it was... I only learnt of her having had this turn for the worse when she was on the ground on the court, and it was distressing to look at it. And I can only imagine the shock that she must have been going through, because she was talking about having... sort of blurred vision, and or at least shivering, and heartbeat racing, and it was deeply unpleasant. So to settle herself down is quite an achievement, really, of mind over body, really.
Well, she had to play another 8 games, you know, and you I thought a lot of those games had 20 shot rallies quite regularly. She wasn't anything like at her best even before she started to have this attack. She was already losing her backhand, so she was reduced to sort of slicing on one side. She wasn't at full power even before the attack struck her. She was even less kind of all systems go, clearly, after it had happened. And yet, you do have an advantage, maybe, with your opponent is completely discombobulated, so she took advantage of that. But still, to win the match, I mean, that's unheard of.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. Well, we'll hear what she's got to say in the press conference, or at least we'll tell you about it once I've come out of the press conference, which is going to happen shortly. We've just had a huge shock with Milos Raonic going out of the tournament, the Wimbledon runner-up, the runner-up at Queen's, to Ryan Harrison, and I think he may have been suffering too.
Yeah, I was out there a minute ago. Yeah, and he could not move at the end of the third set. I went out there and it was 2 hours 30 minutes. And they hadn't even got to the end of the third set, and he was one of his legs was locked up completely. He could barely move. He was like a bear just come out of hibernation. And Harrison was still flowing pretty well, and it was just a case of making enough balls while Raonic lumbered to a standstill. So that was another physical result, 100%.
It's horrible to see. Johanna Konta's just coming into her press conference now, so we'll go into that, and then we'll let you know what she said afterwards. So we've just come out of the press conference with Johanna Konta, and she has revealed the details of what she went through. It does sound particularly unpleasant, but it also sounds, I have to say, pretty much what I thought it might sound like. I didn't think she'd necessarily be quite as forthcoming as she was in the press conference, but she detailed that it wasn't just the sheer physicality of the situation, the heat and the humidity, that pushed her into a position where she started to, in her words, hyperventilate as she was trying to control her breathing. And she said that if anybody here has ever had a panic attack, it's like that, except you feel like your whole muscles are tightening and locking up as well. And I think it's not something alien to tennis players. I've seen it a lot in the past. Anna Ivanovic, I know, has suffered from that in the past on courts, feeling of hyperventilation, and I've heard players describe it as like having worried at least that they might be having a heart attack or something like that. I remember Xavier Molise in the Wimbledon semi-finals of 2002 had to stop for a period of time to let his heartbeat calm down. And obviously we've seen many other players, a much more extreme example would be somebody like Marty Fish, who was very concerned about a heart condition. But you know, sometimes there's a combination of things going on. But fair enough to Joe Konta. She was upfront and explained that situation. She said that I feel really proud of myself that I was able to manage that situation, calm myself down, come back out and still win the match. And in that regard, on a personal note, I still have huge admiration for that, because that is not easy.
Yeah, what she said in there really, really resonated with me and really gave me a picture exactly of what she was going through, because just witnessing it, it was bizarre and extraordinary and uncomfortable. But I mean, I've experienced panic attacks. They are horrendous, both mentally and physically, and you feel silly afterwards. She kept on using the word embarrassing, but in that moment, it is just so suffocatingly terrible. You can't describe, but then you can't recapture that moment afterwards. You can't put yourself in that mindset after the fact. And those conditions, I keep coming back to them, they weren't the hottest in the world, but they were utterly claustrophobic. They were utterly oppressive. And that's the sort of situation, those are the sort of circumstances that can just send your body into sheer panic. It was shock and panic I mean, yeah, the symptoms looked an awful lot like cramp. She didn't use the word cramp. If it had been cramp, then rules were broken. I believe that it wasn't. It tallies for me what she was going through. And I feel bad for her that she feels embarrassed. She was very frank in terms of she has sympathy with Peronkova being upset about the toilet break, but she said, my clothes were soaked through, I had to go and change my clothes, it was within the rules, why wouldn't you do that?
And she said, I was just trying to deal with it the best I could.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those situations where Peronkova is completely right to feel a bit miffed, and I think we all would in her shoes.
Although she was very gracious, wasn't she?
She was, incredibly so. But equally, would we not have done what Joe Konta did in her shoes? I'm not sure any of us really could say that we wouldn't.
What it does mean, Simon Briggs, is that she's a heck of a lot more likely to make a full recovery in time for her next match now, I think, because the reason that I questioned at the time whether it was just cramp at play here in a sort of stricted sense of the word that we've seen with players like Jack Sock here last year and so forth. I don't think I've seen players recover from that level of cramp in the past. So I'm not that surprised as to what the symptoms that she was experiencing and the reasons for them ended up being. But, you know, it does mean that she is more likely to make a full recovery for the next match against Belinda Bencic, I would have thought.
Yeah, she said that she was recovering as best she could. There's an interesting element of stigma that can attach to these moments, isn't there? Victoria Azarenka was attacked by a lot of people after she went off the court in Australia, 2013, slam final against Sloane Stephens.
Semi-final, yeah.
Yeah, semi-final. And there was a lot of backlash. I mean, there won't be the same.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
I'm here because I think it's a much more dramatic physical manifestation that Johanna's had, but it's interesting that she felt embarrassed. I mean, there will be some people who say, was this a mental attack? Was it a physical attack? Should she have been given what was basically half an hour, really, to recover in the middle of a match? And wasn't it unfair that Pironkova wasn't the winner? And these kind of questions are unanswerable, really. And I think I come back to what I said before. You have to admire her for her courage. I think physically it shouldn't necessarily leave a massive amount of hangover for her. But having said that, Christ crikey, none of us have much idea what she's going through, what it was like, the medical implications. It's a pretty grey area, isn't it? I mean, it's probably, these again, mind-body connections, they're different in every case. So anyone's guess to some extent.
And the point, obviously, Catherine made before of having been out there yourself, you do have at least a general sense of what it was like in terms of the conditions, and it was oppressive and it was debilitating. But anyway, thankfully, she isn't as unwell as we were all concerned she might be, and she will play another match against Belinda Bencic. Let's talk about something else, shall we? A little bit more happy. And other matches that we've had today. We've had Raonic go out. He's not very well. Djokovic is through. But, you know, aside from that, Kyle Edmund, he was excellent today.
He was really excellent today. I think he thinks he was a bit less excellent than he was against Gasquet. I was watching a point on, a point off, sheltering in shade. Maybe I missed some of the less good points, but I thought he was great. Escobedo didn't give him much rhythm, very flashy player. A lot of talent, definitely. But Kyle was just so mature again, really, really mature performance. I was a bit concerned for him because it was a very different dynamic. I don't think he's ever gone into a second round Grand Slam match expected so strongly to win. And, you know, he does put a lot of pressure on himself. He's a very intense young man. So I was a bit concerned that might get to him. And there were some signs of that early on, but they ebbed away, and it was never in doubt by sort of midway through the second set, really.
I imagine you were following that one closely, Simon.
Yeah, I was out there most of it. I think he didn't play well first set, but he definitely improved once he got through that, which is quite tricky because he's down set point at 4-5, and he served well throughout the set when he was in trouble. One thing I did notice, a couple of Andy Murray-esque lobs.
Yeah, I saw the same thing, and I was thinking, I think I commentated on Five Live at the time, that Andy Murray would be nodding at the one that he lifted when stretched way out to his right, lifted a lob, put it on the baseline, won the point, proper scrapper's point.
I mean, that's not necessarily what we've seen from Kyle in his developmental years. He was pretty one-dimensional. I mean, the dimension was pretty awesome. It was this crazy sort of flamethrower of a forehand, so that was a great dimension to have, but I just think, you know, he's got a bit of a mentorship going with Andy, and maybe some of the variations we saw for him today are really rubbing off in a quite a personal way. You know, when they went up to the net, there was pretty much one winner. Escobedo had no clue what to do with Kyle when he started to do things that are slightly different. And we don't necessarily think of Kyle as somebody who does stuff differently, somebody who shows touch and feel and guile and lobs and approaches and drop shots, and he was doing them, and that was impressive. And he scored actually higher with those than he did going left to right and playing shuttling ground stroke rallies.
Can he beat John Isner?
Can. I mean, who knows what John Isner is going to be like? He's had a four setter and a five setter. He can get tired. I know he goes through enough of these long matches to get used to them. A lot of it come down to Kyle's return. Probably still not the strongest part of his game. Got to put a lot of balls back in court, make him play tie breaks.
And just a quick word from you, Simon, on what you saw from Andy Murray last night. I mean, he couldn't have looked better, really, could he?
Yeah, I kind of felt like giving the title now.
Oh, come on, don't be silly. Well, actually, incidentally, just quickly, Catherine, what do you think about this? The fact that Djokovic got through without playing today, does that help him? Does that hinder him? I mean, it gives him more time to recover, but I kind of feel as though he needs to find some rhythm and routine and start to feel like the best player in the world again.
Yeah, certainly people wiser than me seem to think it's probably more of a negative than a positive. Heard the guys back in the Eurosport studio talking, Annabelle Croft and Greg Rosedsky, saying they thought it was a negative. He just needs matches. He needs to build the momentum, you know, shift through the gears as the top guys do through the early rounds. And this will sort of set him one gear behind where he would like to be. But then if the injuries are as bad as they at moments looked on, well, whenever it was, Monday night, then it can only be a good thing. Resting injured parts of your body surely is, it can only be a good thing. So possibly a swings and roundabouts situation.
What do you think, Simon?
Yeah, Novak's such a mystery right now. We don't know what he's going through emotionally, what he's going through physically. You know, Becker was quite outspoken on the Tuesday saying, oh, we had a great practice day today. We really enjoyed it. And that was sort of like almost protesting too much, wasn't it? But who knows what is going on with anybody in that camp. I just think it's an utter mystery. And one day Novak will write his book and we will find out exactly what's going on. But right now I don't have the foggiest.
You're not really just going to give the title to Andy Murray right now, are you, Simon?
Kind of. I mean, who's been anywhere near him in the first 3 days?
Yeah, 3 days, Simon. There's another 11 to go. He's got to win 6 more matches, for goodness sake.
No, I know, but he couldn't have played any better, could he? And he couldn't have looked more controlled. And at the moment, the rest of the pack, I mean, we just lost the third favourite, but didn't we? Wasn't Ranić third favourite coming in?
Well, he was up there, but yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. He's out, and he will take no further part. We'll find out how Rafael Nadal gets on in the evening session. I'll come back after that's finished and bring you up to date. And here I am. So, Rafael Nadal did indeed go through, pretty straightforwardly really, against Andreas Seppi, but there was one significant talking point during the match, which I'll tell you about in just a moment. But Garbiñe Muguruza is the highest seeded player so far to go out of the US Open on a day that Miloš Raonic also lost, with all those difficulties in the heat and cramping and so forth. Muguruza lost today in the night session just before Nadal went onto the court against Andrea Sevastova, a player that has taken 2 years out of the game because she kind of lost her way. She'd had injury problems and decided she didn't want to play anymore, and has come back onto the circuit and had this most wonderful win in straight sets. But it does rather ask questions about Garbiñe Muguruza, whose rough run continues. She has not won too many matches since winning the French Open, lost early at Wimbledon, and has now lost very early at the US Open. So Muguruza is out. Nadal, though, was dominant. He won the first 7 games of his match against Andreas Seppi, who's a very good player. But the talking point from the night, what it will always be remembered for, the Wednesday night of the US Open in 2016, was the moment that the roof button was pressed for the first time. And it was such a significant moment that the USTA immediately released the following statement. The retractable roof over Arthur Ashe Stadium was activated for the first time during the second round match featuring Rafael Nadal and Andreas Seppi. Play was suspended at 10:38 and 58 seconds Eastern Standard Time, and play resumed at 10:46 and 20 seconds. Total suspension of play was 7 minutes and 22 seconds. The roof closed in 5 minutes and 35 seconds. The closing occurred prior to Nadal serving at 3 games all in the second set. Nadal won the first set 6-love. Rafael Nadal has the distinction of hitting the first practice and match ball under a closed roof in the Arthur Ashe Stadium. So if Nadal wasn't going to be remembered for anything else, and let's face it, there's plenty to remember the guy by, having won 14 Grand Slam titles, Davis Cup, Olympic gold, and been number one for countless weeks, he is always going to be the bloke who had the roof close above him during a match for the very first time. So that pretty much wrapped up the evening session. It was a straightforward win for Nadal in straight sets. He moves onwards. And I should also mention a fabulous win earlier on today for Caroline Wozniacki, former world number one, US Open finalist of a couple of years ago. And she had been before as well, in 2009, I think it was. And she was up against Svetlana Kuznetsova, who's won one of these things. And Kuznetsova came out blazing in this match. Went 4-love up, love 30 as well on Wozniacki. Wozniacki's serve, and the Dane probably taking advantage a little bit of some erratic play from the Russian. But still, Caroline Wozniacki played fantastic tennis to come back. And this is a woman who's really struggled this year. She's had countless injury problems, and she's gone down to world number 74. The form has gone, and suddenly it is back. Great to see Caroline Wozniacki playing good tennis once more. We should also just draw your attention to some of the highlights of tomorrow's schedule. Thursday's order of play is out, and on the Arthur Ashe Stadium it features Simona Halep against Lucy Safarova to start off. Then Andy Murray will be in action. That'll be at about 6 p.m. UK time, 1 o'clock in the afternoon in New York. He's up against Marcel Granollers of Spain, player he usually beats. He shouldn't have too many problems. And then we have Yulia Gerges against Venus Williams. That could be close, because Gerges hits a big ball if she's on her game, and Venus Williams needs no introduction. The evening session will be Serena Williams against Vanya King. And then how about this for a humdinger of a match? Steve Johnson of the United States, the American number one at the moment, is going to be up against Juan Martin Del Potro under the lights. And I dare say we might see one or two tears once more from the big Argentine, win or lose, because he'll be back on the biggest stage where he won the US Open title in 2009. On the Louis Armstrong court, there's Kei Nishikori playing. There's Agnieszka Radwanska against Naomi Brody of Great Britain, who's going to be on court, we reckon, about 6 o'clock in the evening, same sort of time as Andy Murray. We've got Suarez Navarro taking on Yankovic. Stan Wawrinka will play on the Louis Armstrong court later on in the evening. One or two others. Nick Kyrgios will play on the new grandstand court. Dare say he's going to like it out there, Kyrgios, his kind of place. That'll be the last match on the grandstand court, you know, late afternoon, early evening. And just a note as well on Dan Evans of Great Britain, who's in second round action, and this is an exciting one. He's fourth on court number 5 against Alexander Zverev. That will be worth watching, I can assure you. There's plenty to watch. There's plenty to enjoy. We hope you enjoy it, whether you're watching on Eurosport or ESPN, I suppose, in the US, if you're listening on BBC Radio 5 Live in the UK, which I'll be commentating on, and 5 Live Sports Extra, or maybe if you are able to attend yourself and actually see some of these matches at the US Open. And then, of course, listen to the tennis podcast afterwards. We'll try to record another one tomorrow night. But for now, thanks for listening. We'll speak to you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.